This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Otakoti, Dunedin, and I am joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. I am running around like a crazy thing, getting ready to go to Botswana.
That's so exciting. Is it exciting? Is it terrifying?
It's exciting. I don't think it's terrifying. I'm not a scaredy traveller. I perhaps sometimes think I should be more aware of my surroundings and things, but I'm too busy looking at stuff to worry about anything. Maybe that's a bit of a flaw, but I think I'm going to stick to that plan.
Well, I did take you on that road tour through the scary parts of Whakatane once, and you coped with that very well.
Well, that was scary.
Well, it's exciting to go somewhere new. How long does it take to get there?
Oh, forever. Forever and ever. I leave on Friday afternoon and get there Sunday afternoon.
Oh.
And then I'm running a conference all week, and then I've got a few days in Cape Town visiting the University of Cape Town. And what do you know? That's where the Cape Flora is. Oh, is it? Yes, it is. And then I'm coming home, and it takes just as long to get home. So,
well, we look forward to having you home because we've got more interviews to do.
Indeed. Who are we talking with today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce another one of our finance students from the Contemporary Issues and Sustainability paper. Welcome, Joe Kelsey. It is a joy to have you with us today.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Welcome, Joe. Where'd you grow up, Joe?
From Auckland, originally.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
What did I want to be? I think back when I was little, I wanted to be a zookeeper for some reason. Pretty random, but...
Auckland does have a good zoo.
I ended up taking a slightly different path, but, you know, it's all good.
You're surrounded by sporting things.
Yeah, I've got a pair of skis behind me and a few jerseys. I'm actually up in one of my mates' room at the moment, but get a bit of peace and quiet.
I was going to say you're a sporty person, but no, it's your mate that's sporty.
No, I am sporty as well.
And so what led you to a career in finance? Let's assume that studying finance is aiming for a career in finance. Maybe it's not.
My brother studied finance, and I kind of had a bit of an influence on me. Just the amount that he was sort of learning and how much he enjoyed it got me a bit excited. So I did finance and economics to start with, and then an extra year doing my master's in finance, which has been great. Met a lot of great people down here. I think it's the main thing coming down to Otago is the amount of people you meet. And so, yeah, ended up in a flat with just people from all over, which I think has been really cool and something I probably wouldn't have been able to quite do if I just sort of stayed in Auckland and didn't really branch out.
So you're doing, what did Mawira just say, the course was called Contemporary Issues in Sustainable Awesomeness or something?
Yeah, awesomeness, yeah.
How did that get its way into your qualification?
I think it was just to do something a little bit different to what I've been sort of studying, because it's quite heavily finance-based last year. And my first semester was all just finance papers, so sort of looked at it as a pretty cool opportunity to, gain some exposure to a slightly different part of what I'm actually studying.
But why sustainability? You could have picked, I don't know, Chinese or something.
Well, sustainability is the future, really. So, it's just growing more and more important, I guess, as we go forward. So I think, yeah, it's important that I did get a bit of exposure to that sort of part of, yeah, everything.
Had you had much exposure to that in your undergrad?
Not a lot, a little bit through economics, I think. And in the first year, you do quite a few papers that are compulsory to sort of that tie in with sustainability. Through my second and third year, not a whole lot. So it's good to get another paper in to do with it.
So what happens to a maths brain when it meets sustainability?
It goes crazy. No, it was good. I'm enjoying it.
Do you, in your head, do you relate it back to a sort of a finance model of the world?
Slightly. You can definitely see the links between the two. It's obviously quite different to sort of the finance world.
Joe and Mawira telling you stuff that the finance people would run away and cover their hands in horror if they heard them saying it.
Certainly some finance people, but no, not me.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Oh, it's a good one. Elton John, yeah. Benny and the Jets. Play this one.
Good old Elton. Good song.
Around, you're gonna hear
everybody has got someone who's the wind beneath their wings or the inspiration. Who have been your role models and how did they inspire you?
Oh, my role models. Guess when I was a bit younger playing rugby, Richie McCaw was a good one. Leading that, he was always a big someone I looked up to. I played in the same jersey as him, so that was quite cool, you know, when I was a bit younger. I guess my parents, my old man, does inspire me how hard he works and sort of want to follow on what he sort of taught me. So it's another big one. And yeah, trying to think of some more of it.
When you were growing up, did anyone ever ask you what you want to be when you grow up? Was that a thing that you were asked a lot as you grew up?
I think only when in those really early days, sort of primary school. And I never really knew what I wanted to do. So I can never really answer that question. Because I was kind of just going through everything and then sort of seeing where I ended up. So I didn't really have any huge desires to be anything from, you know, through sort of intermediate and stuff. But, you know, I'm glad I've sort of taken the path and I'm still kind of finding my way to where I'm going to end up. Obviously, I haven't sorted any work at this stage for next year, so I'm sort of just feeling out, where it's gonna lead me.
And if this is my favourite question to ask. If I had a magic wand, because sometimes I really do, if I had a magic wand and I could put you 10 years into the future, what are you doing and where are you doing it?
What am I doing? Ideally, I'd be running a sort of remote role, traveling around lots, getting a bit of surfing in, snowboarding, all that good stuff. I think just the main goal would be able to have that flexibility to travel and sort of spend time doing the things that I would like to do, because I think time is much more valuable than money. So, you know, the more less hours I'm working, the more time I can get to do what I want or I can find something where I'm really, the main thing is just I'm enjoying what I'm doing.
Well, I can tell you that now at the grand old age of 54, it's taken me this long to figure that out. So you've got it sussed. You're on the right track in your life. It's awesome. So if you haven't got a job for next year, what is it that you think you'd like to do next year? Let's see if our network can fill a gap for you.
So at the end of this year, I'm just going to be traveling. So I'm going to head over to Japan and work a season there. That's going to be the main first thing I'm going to do. And while I'm there, because I'm just sort of volunteering at a place, so I'm going to have a bit of free time on my hands to sort of try, you know, I'm going to try learn some new things on the computer, try to pick up a few new skills that are sort of, you know, coming more important today, especially with sort of AI and stuff coming in. So sort of see if anything can sort of stick there, but I'm going to keep messaging around and see if I can get the role back in Auckland, because ideally I'd want to come back and spend a bit of time with the family after being away for, you know, 4 years at uni. I'm not too stressed about it, because I think if I just sort of, you know, keep at it, something was going to come up. It always does seem to sort of work out in the end.
Yep, that is a good life philosophy. And that way, if it hasn't worked out, it's not the end.
Just got to keep at it.
Joe, you are number three, the third person who is going to be talking about their podcast. Who did you interview and why did you choose them?
So I interviewed Jet Swanberg, who's actually my roommate at the moment, so it was quite easy to organise that one. I chose him because he sort of, you know, gone out on a bit of a limb and started his own little venture, which I think is quite cool, especially, I think he must have started it in second year of university. I think he started getting the ball moving. He does the Solo Boost, which is the reusable chargers, and I thought it was quite cool because I could tell I had so many times where I could have used that product and it could have been really helpful to me, you know, when I've had a dead phone and I'm running around, you know. So that's kind of one of the main reasons.
Oh, that's cool. All right, let's listen.
Welcome to today's Sustainable Business Podcast. I'm Joe, and today we're going to be exploring one of the fastest growing environmental challenges of our time, which is e-waste. Now, before we dive deep, I want to introduce my guest. He's not just a business founder, but he's a good mate of mine, Jet Swinberg, who is the co-founder of Solo Boost, a startup with a sustainable mission to keep your phone charged when you need it most. All right, before we dive into the serious stuff, for our audience that don't know Jet, do you mind just telling us where you're from originally?
Yeah, bro. So before I moved down to Dunedin, I was from the Mount up in Tauranga.
Yep, and you went to school?
Yep, went to school through there, lived there my whole life, you know, nice. Surfed, played rugby there. It's a pretty big part of who I am.
Nice. And have you still been surfing down in Dunedin, or not as much?
Oh, not too much. It's quite cold.
Yeah, Mount's a bit warmer than down
yeah,
here.
Yeah,
eh?
For sure.
And so footy, you've still playing footy down in Otago, or?
Yeah, it's still playing down here, playing for Dunedin Sharks, so loving that.
Nice. How's the season been going this year?
Oh, it's been going all right, you know. A lot of ups and downs, but nah, it's good fun, especially for the social side of things.
Mm. Stay nice and fit, or are you a bit...
Unfit now the season's just coming to an end, but...
Yeah,
nah,
I can
nah.
imagine.
Yeah.
So yeah, outside of that, what do you like to do when you're not working on Solo Boost?
Well, currently, I'm undertaking my master's in finance, so that yep. takes up a lot of my time. But aside from this, I like to volunteer down here at the SPCA, and you know, having fun. I like to go on long walks, play golf. A big outdoors man.
Big outdoors guy. How's the golf been going?
Golf's been good. It's definitely not as much now with, you know, Solo Boost getting pretty big and, you know, my master's dissertation due soon, so haven't had a lot of time to play, but yeah, when I can, I like to get out there.
Get into the business end of the year.
Exactly.
All right, very good. So, Jet, let's start at the beginning. How did Solo Boost sort of first get started?
Yeah, so initially it was actually a project for university where we had to start a self-directed venture, but the idea itself came from a real-life festival experience. You know, my phone was dead, which I feel is a pretty common theme at festivals.
Happened to me.
From there, I couldn't find my mates, buy drinks, or call a ride home. Realising this just wasn't inconvenient, you know, it's unsafe. So we researched a couple current solutions and saw they had a lot of flaws and came out with our product.
Nice. And I know you originally started with single use, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so what was that phase sort of like, and why did you make that decision to pivot into reusable charging ports?
That's a good question. So, like, fundamentally, thinking purely business, the single use was perfect. You know, it's easy to roll out. Financially, it was great, but we soon realised that, you know, there was a lot of environmental pushback, not only from the consumers, but from the festivals too. It was hard to land clients and get organisers on board. And even me and my business partner had a bad conscience about it, you know. Mm. We explored recyclable methods or better batteries, but it was tricky. And eventually, we just landed on creating a reusable charger so that they no longer needed to be disposed of.
Right.
And, you know, although this costed a lot more to produce, but the feedback from the festivals and the consumers, we realised it was a much better long-term solution and fits the sustainability trend.
Yeah, definitely going to be the right move in the long term. Before we dive into there a little bit further, I just want to connect this to some recent academic research which I have found. So 2 years ago in 2023, there was a paper published by V. Verda, and that was called Design for Reusability and Product Reuse Under Radical Innovation and Uncertainty. Quite a title. The big takeaway is simple but powerful. Instead of designing products to be disposable, business can design them to be used, recharged, and reused multiple times. So even in industries where technology changes rapidly. Mm. So yeah, this approach does not only reduce waste, but also builds stronger relationships with consumers who increasingly expect businesses to act responsibly, as I'm sure you've found. So yeah, when you think about it, Solo Boost is really a textbook example of what Verda sort of found. You know, starting with those single-use chargers and pivoting to reusables. So this isn't really just a research idea. Around the world, we're seeing policies and companies being pushed towards sustainability. I think an interesting thing I saw was the European Union, I think in 2022 it was, passed a law requiring USB-C charging ports on all of their smartphones. So we saw that Apple adoption with their iPhone 15. So the goal here was simple: cut e-waste and consumer hassle by standardizing charging ports, so fewer people need cables and replacements. But regulation alone is enough. That's where startups like SolarBoost come in, you know, offering innovative, user-friendly, reusable solutions that help close this gap. So Jet, from your perspective, how big of a problem is e-waste, especially in something as everyday as phone chargers?
I mean, yeah, it's massive, right? I mean, chargers and cables are one of the biggest small electronic categories in the world. I mean, billions are thrown away every year. It adds up globally, and most end up in landfill because recycling options are limited. Yeah. And, you know, you've got the mindset that it's small individually, but, like, in aggregate, when everyone in the world has these things, it's huge.
Yeah, right. So do you think consumers really understand the impact of these single-use electronics?
I mean, I think for most people, the impact is invisible. Chargers and cables are cheap, easy to replace, and often, like, treated as throwaway items. Yeah. The out-of-sight, out-of-mind factor definitely plays a role. You know, once a charger stops working or gets lost, it's just binned without much thought about where it ends up. But I think, you know, the younger crowd is definitely starting to think differently. Sustainability awareness has grown a lot, especially around plastics, packaging and fast fashion. But I think electronics are only just starting to be a part of that conversation. And I think, you know, SolarBoost fits right into the space. We obviously started with single-use chargers and realised pretty quickly that we were adding to the very problem we wanted to help solve. Yeah. So pivoting to the reusables allowed us to, you know, reduce this waste while still solving that same pain point.
Nice. So tell us a little bit more about your reusable chargers today. So how do they actually work?
So we offer two different models. We've got the USB-C and the Lightning dongles.
Right.
The chargers are compact. You know, they're no wider than the phone itself. They don't require any cords. They come pre-charged.
Nice.
And, but, you know, the design, business model and everything still remains the same as when we had the single-use units. However, now they obviously have that recharging input. Basically, we want all the stress off the consumer and the festival organisers.
Nice. And they're pretty small, right? So I could just be able to fit that in my pocket.
Yeah, for sure.
When I go out, right. So what sort of makes them different from everything that's already on the market?
So current solutions to the problem in the festival space at the moment are like charging stations or power banks, both I feel which are pretty unsuitable to fast-paced events like festivals. You know, with charging stations, you need all that infrastructure and staff, as well as the festival attendee has to leave their phone unattended, which I think is pretty unideal. And, you know, things like power banks are big and heavy and require cords. And let's be honest, who's carrying a cord around with them at a festival?
Yeah, you did right. So, yeah, with that shift from single to reusables, was it quite challenging making that move? And if you don't mind me asking, was there much of a cost increase from, you know, switching to a more sustainable sort of...
No, you're completely fine there. And it's a good question because, honestly, the pivot was not easy. The first big hurdle was cost, obviously. The reusable charger needs to be built with stronger, more durable components compared to the single-use unit.
Right.
That meant our production cost per unit jumped up quite a bit, almost like 25%. So straight away, we had to think differently about how we priced and positioned the product. And on top of that, we had to completely redesign our packaging and messaging. When we first launched with single-use chargers, the selling point was all about quick convenience, grab it, use it, biff it away. But when we pivoted, the story had to shift. Suddenly, we were talking about longevity, reusability, sustainability. That meant rethinking everything from the way packaging looked to the instructions on how to recharge it, to how we explain the environmental benefits to the festivals and consumers. I mean, yeah, it was definitely a challenge, but the payoff has been worth it. Even the upfront cost is higher. The switch has actually strengthened our brand. Festivals are increasingly conscious about sustainability commitments and they see us as a product that aligns with that.
Yeah.
Plus the chargers can be reused. We're just getting stronger, repeat demand. Organisers see the value of having something that keeps patrons safe and connected without creating a pile of waste at the end of the night. So yeah, the cost was higher, but the long-term upside has definitely outweighed that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I could definitely see the benefits from that as well. You know, if you buy it on the first night of the festival, you could use it for the rest of it.
Exactly.
You charge it out throughout the day. I think that's quite good. So who's your target? So we've talked about festivals. It must be a big one. I can't count how many times my phone's died at a festival and I've just been wandering around like a headless chicken. But so, yeah, are there any other targets outside of festivals that you're looking into?
Yeah, no, you're right. Festivals are our main market. You know, they've got massive crowds. Everyone's on their phones for photos, videos and cashless payments and trying to find their mates. But of course, usually nowhere to plug in. So that kind of environment is perfect storm for what SolarBoost solves. But Now, there are a few other areas we could see it being of use. You know, we see demand in bars or clubs and stadiums as well. Basically, anywhere where people are out on their feet for long hours and don't have easy access to charging. You know, we've even talked about some applications in the outdoor survival space because the need is really the same, quick, reliable charging when you're away from power. In terms of audience, I mean, we try not to narrow it down too much because at the end of the day, it's a safety product. The whole point is that if you're in a vulnerable situation, whether that's trying to get home late at night or needing to make an urgent call, you've got that backup ready. That said, there definitely is a younger crowd who use it the most. I mean, they're the ones out at festivals and events when losing power can quickly become more than an inconvenience. So while we frame it as for anyone who needs it, we resonate strongly with a younger audience for sure.
Mm, and it's quite interesting you bring up about the sort of survival aspect to it. So sure. You do still have that sort of older
crowd that can
get involved. So
exactly.
What's the sort of the shelf life on, say, if you were to put in like a survival kit and go out hunting?
Exactly. So that's what we're looking at now with our supplier. We're looking at some emergency kits to be provided with the charges in it. So the shelf life is about 4 or 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's massive. So you can keep it in there, buy it, and just only use it when you need it, really.
Right, yeah, so probably it's good to have just a couple like in your car or
exactly.
wherever you're going to be going around.
Exactly.
Ah, interesting. So, yeah, and finally, where do you see SoloBoost going in the next sort of 3 to 5 years? What's the sort of dream mission? Any key sort of markets or events you really want SoloBoost to be at? Or
100%. I mean,
excited about?
Yeah, for sure. We're growing super fast at the moment, but like in the next few years, we want to be the main New Zealand presence. I mean, we've already started working with some of the country's biggest names, and the goal is to keep building on that so that when people think of a festival in NZ, they also think of SoloBoost being there. And then from there, I think the natural step is to expand into Australia.
Yeah.
The festival and event scene over there is massive. The problems we're solving the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
And long term, we don't want to stop there either. I mean, this is a global issue. We can see opportunities to take SoloBoost into events worldwide.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess the dream is for SoloBoost to become the go-to emergency brand for events, not just another accessory, but something people recognise as part of the safety infrastructure at a festival. Right up there with, you know, water stations or security. If someone's phone dies, they shouldn't have to stress. They should know SoloBoost is there, reliable and, you know, ready. That's the vision, I guess, we're chasing.
Nice. Yeah, so what I really love about your story is the pivot. So SoloBoost didn't stay stuck in the single-use products, as we see many of those companies who sort of cut corners, trying to maximise profits do. You guys adapted, sort of embraced reusability and built a business model that not only works, but also aligns with the sustainability research and global regulation.
Yeah, for sure.
For me, you know, this shows that sustainability in a business isn't about being perfect from day one. It's about being willing to evolve and innovate, as you guys did.
100%.
So I'm sure you guys could have made a lot more money sort of just cutting those corners. And
exactly.
Yeah. So thank you very much for joining me, Jet. And thank you to everyone who's been listening.
No worries. I've loved it. It's been great.
Good. So the future of sustainability isn't just about governments or big tech companies. It's also about startups here like Jet, entrepreneurs, and the choices that we all make every day.
That was really great interview, Joe. And of course, we last week interviewed Jet as well. So we were expecting great things and we heard great things. Good work, team.
Thank you.
What was your big takeaway from the interview with Jet?
A big takeaway was probably just the importance of that pivot they did make. Originally started off with just the single use chargers as I guess the sort of way people can, if you do take that sort of pathway with just the unreusable stuff, obviously you can make a bit more money, but I think in the long run, it's just really not worth, you know, a product that's going to be actually grow to become something that, you know, you can see everywhere. So I think the big takeaway, the takeaway from that is how important it is to look forward when you're making decisions and make sure that it is something that people will be able to support moving forward.
And where do you see the potential there And you know, like it's almost like I call these mokopuna decisions. So mokopuna is our grandchildren. We're making decisions for the future, and I see this as that kind of thinking that's coming out of your generation. This real thinking about, you know, like what is the impact of this decision that I'm making? Is it the right decision? These are ways of thinking that that kind of the generation, especially before the generation before Sam and I, just did never considered stuff like that. They but there also wasn't as much plastic around. That's been a thing that has come, you know, as we've grown up, the world has become more infested with plastic. But so do you see that thinking, that aversion to single use anything, is that going to become a much bigger deal in your lives as you grow up and
I
grow
think,
older?
I think definitely. I think there's always been that sort of shift towards reusable, because obviously rubbish is a big problem. We recently did a sort of little project in our flat for the paper, where we focused on, we've got in a flat of 18 odd boys, so a lot of rubbish goes through the flat, and just a lot of single use sort of, even just like we started buying stuff in bulk and stuff just to cut down on the sort of single use packaging and stuff. But I think, as going forward, it's just going to become more and more important, especially, just as everything keeps moving forward.
Are these things that are really going to, and are they now embedded in your life as when you move out of university and you start going around the world, and is this who you are? This is how you live now?
Yes, I would say so. I try to make sure that I can cut down on. I buy more stuff. I think the main thing is purchasing value as well, because if you're buying a cheaper product, it's only going to last you, a quarter of the time, and then you have to end up buying another one. So I guess originally it seems like a good idea because you're saving money and whatever, but I think buying stuff that is actually going to last you is really important. So that's one of the main things that I sort of do. I've kind of got a same set of clothes, same set of shoes that have sort of lasted me, however long, which is good.
That is a good thing.
Yeah.
I feel like that.
Anton, who we started Sustainable Lens with, the podcast that turned into this show, decided or committed in about 2012 that he was never going to buy anything else that didn't outlast him. So everything he was going to buy, other than obviously consumables, everything else was going to be things that he would be quite sure would be repairable, so that they would outlast him.
Wow,
How
that's
soon
pretty
can you make
impressive.
that commitment, do you think?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I'm pretty hard on my shoes, so I'm not sure I'd be able to get a pair that would last me very long. But I guess you could
Get
always get
some
it.
Dr. Martin boots.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
It's hard to run around in, though.
Yeah, that is true.
It'd be interesting playing rugby here of Doc Martin.
Yeah.
It would be good if those the several attempts that there's been at clothes as a service, it would be good if one of those would actually really work. If someone could actually sort that as a business model. I would argue, and I'm going to argue, and I've been arguing, that business has got us into the mess that we're in. Can it get us out?
Who knows? It is true. I guess everything, profit drives everything, I guess. So you're making more money from people rebuying things. So who wants to be the guy that steps up and actually makes the change to sell people something that's going to last them their lifetime? So I'm sure there will be some products that come through that will, change everything, hopefully. And
Is
yeah,
that
hopefully.
a fundamentally broken thing that business relies on us buying stuff?
Yeah, I think, just the way everything's sort of got set up, I think it's going to be quite hard to break that, break that cycle, because I guess it's people's job, it's where they've been running things. And yeah.
Bubble sprite of the wild coasts, secluded inlets, and forest and beaches of Otago Peninsula. Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Tahu Mackenzie. I've been with Steve, Beautiful Superstars and Beloved Universals. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever is happening around you, this journey we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique and here, making things better. Thank you. Now I know that the last several years have been very tough for us all. It's so important that we give ourselves and each other the care, the compassion, the kindness, the love, the support, the time and the space, which we so richly deserve and innately can provide. And of course, as a species, we love to come together and we love to create together, and being part of this show for the last several years, it's been a huge privilege and pleasure. So big thank you to Sam and the Blown Bubbles team. When we come together, of course, and share our ideas and learn from one another, we evolve. And I also believe something else that we require as a species in order to come together is solitude. And I've had the last several days really recharging myself thanks to having the opportunity to have some solitude. And I really appreciate it. It's been a very busy time with the school holidays, and I've been prancing about with lots of lovely young people and talking all about how the hoi haw live. We now have 3 breeding pairs of hoi haw, which is very exciting. And, you know, it's been a wonderful, wonderful thing to share time and space with all sorts of different life forms. And, of course, with solitude, sometimes the more deeply you go into your solitude, the more you can then extend outward into the world again. And so I really hope for you, you're having the opportunity to have some time to yourself, and you're having the opportunity to rejuvenate and refresh yourself in this way. And I think the other important aspect of solitude that, you know, may not be so valued in our culture now is the capacity that we have for processing and recalibration and recognition of what's taken place, understanding what's taken place, all these things. And I'm not sure if it's possible to do all those things with other people around. And of course, there's always a part of our consciousness that is in solitude, that is quite objective and watching our lives unfold. And in many ways, of course, we are always experiencing reality uniquely, and so is everyone else. So in a sense, we have that constant solitude of our own unique experience. But for me, because I do really love working with people, with human animals of all shapes and sizes and ages, it is important to retreat into the hermit zone sometimes to recharge my energy for that. So I really hope for you, you're finding a balance between interacting with the other life forms around you and giving yourself that sacred space of recognition, of recalibration, of recovery, of peace, of curiosity, of processing. And when, of course, we rest in this way, we re-emerge energized and curious and looking forward to those interactions once again. I also think that for all of us, it's so important to cultivate that strong connection with self, that our inner essence, which is immutable and ever-present, can be such a comfort to us, and at times we need that solitude to re-establish that connection. So I really hope for you getting the opportunity to do that, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Joe Kelsey. Joe, you've come through a finance education background, and Joe and Mawira have been subverting that by talking about sustainability right at the end. of the things that they've talked about, what's had the biggest impact on you?
So, something that sort of stuck with me is when Mobita made a comment after we did a presentation about our rubbish removal from our flat, making sure we're recycling and all that. And she sort of brought up, because we obviously there's 18 of us, and she was sort of wondering.
What do you mean 18? 18 in your flat?
Yeah, 18.
What?
Crazy.
How many bedrooms have you got?
I think there's 12 or 13. So there's a couple sharing. it is a big flat. So there's a lot of rubbish. So it is, it's quite a big thing. Just discussing whether if what we've been applying in the flat, because obviously we were doing it for our project. So we did it over like a 5-week period, 3-week period. And she just sort of asked, do you think that the boys would sort of leaving Dunedin and moving forward are going to carry through doing the sort of things that we were doing? So I think it's just interesting to talk about how whether people actually apply what we sort of learn in class, and because obviously we all get told, especially through those sustainability papers, what's the right thing to do and how bad this is and all of that, and whether it actually has an impact on people, I think is quite interesting. Obviously it has, I've noticeably had a positive impact in our flat, so I do think it is going to carry forward some of the things we've implemented, so we're still doing it after finishing that, which I think is a good sign.
It is a good sign.
Yeah.
And it's just so important because change only has value if it's enduring change. Temporary change doesn't change anything, but an enduring change does.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's take the second of your music choices. Let's have Simply Red, Sunrise. Why this one?
It's got a good beat to it.
Oh,
have some questions to end the show. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
The biggest success? I think our rugby team. It was 5 years ago. So my last year of school, we managed to take out the comp, which was our first win as a team. Yeah, our first, my first competition. We took out the grade, which was really cool. Especially doing it in the last year of school, it was quite cool to end on that. So yeah, quite proud of that to this day.
Yeah.
Good work.
So what's your superpower?
My superpower? Ooh. I guess that I'm just up for anything is the main thing. Always keen to get out of the house and whatever it is anyone's keen to do, I'm always up for it. I think it's quite a good quality to have. And yeah.
And with 18 people in the flat, there's always somebody wanting to go and do something.
Yeah, exactly. We've got a tennis court next door, so we've all sort of picked up tennis recently, which has been really fun. It is hard work, though.
Do you have to be strict on yourself about getting some work done?
Yeah. There's always something going on, round of golf or going out for a surf. But yeah, it's good to find that balance, I think.
Just on the birthday parties. It must be somebody's birthday nearly every week.
Yeah, that's true as well. Yeah.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I wouldn't say too much overly, but yeah.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
What gets me out of bed? Obviously friends and family is the main thing. Sometimes my roommate's alarm goes off before me, so that's another thing. obviously my degree is really important to me, and making sure I'm, you know, working hard and making most of the learning that I can get out of the university is really key. Obviously being able to work through and find my way into a career that I enjoy is, you know, above all the main thing. And yeah.
So what's the biggest challenge or opportunity that you're looking forward to?
Biggest challenge, I've got finishing my master's, I've got a big thesis, which I'm going to, because obviously I want to go traveling, so I'm going to try knuckle down these next couple of weeks and get most of it done. But now it is exciting. I went and had a discussion with the lecturer and we've got a few things lined up, which will be good.
What's your thesis on?
I'm doing it, it's quite finance-y, but it's just, there's a new sort of thing that's come around recently called Polymarket. You could search it up and you'll be able to see it, but you can sort of trade on a whole lot of different events that are happening. And I'm sort of comparing to how those sort of are similar or different to traditional forecasts of things. So hopefully you can find something interesting in there.
Cool. And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Ooh, any advice? I guess just whatever, just do it. If there's anything you're sort of weighing up that, you know, excites you, I guess it's worth sort of taking that risk and sort of just going at it. Sort of the main thing while I'm heading over traveling, trying something new, going solo for a little bit. So it'd be cool to sort of branch out and meet some new people. That's another thing. Make sure you, when you enter a room and you don't know someone, make sure you say hello to them, because I think that's really important. That's what I've enjoyed most about university, making sure you branch out to people you don't normally just talk to, whether it's in class or if you're out having some drinks or whatever. Go introduce yourself.
And with a Just Do It swoosh over to Mawira.
So you are a really interesting generation of finance students in that you are not the typical lads about town. There's something quite wonderful about having you in the class. Your contribution has been rich and meaningful. You personally, from my observation of you, is that you've just got this really lovely, gentle leadership style that's not all flash and fabulous. It's just very practical, and you're a good guider of people, I think. And I think that you've got a massive future ahead of you. I'm so excited to hear that you're heading over to Japan to have an OE, so I wish you all the best with that. And I'm really interested to see where you go with your life. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Joe. We're going to go out to Caravan Palace, Lone Digger. With people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. Joe Kelsey brought us his contribution today for Coming Up for Air. With Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mate wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.